The economy is getting stronger, banks are lending again, and interest rates are at historic lows. Now is a great time to buy your dream home. The caring and knowledgeable professionals at Homes for You have been helping people just like you for over 20 years. They take the time to listen to what you want and will help you find just the right home in Washington or Idaho. Real estate is what we do at Homes for You, 928-5782, or visit online at homes4uspokane.com.
Health is something we all have and can all do something to make better. Better health, better care, lower costs. That's Better Health, sponsored by Better Health Together, with your host, Sulani Mattson.
Well, welcome to the podcast today, and we have a very special guest, Kathleen O'Connor, the author of The Buck Still Stops Nowhere, now out in its third and updated edition on why America's healthcare is all dollars and no cents and what you can do to change it. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thanks, Sulani. I'm delighted to be talking with you.
I enjoyed reading through the book. I think this first session we're going to focus on long-term care, which is something that I know you've recently dealt with within your family. I have in mine, and it's very common for us in this generation to either be facing those decisions for ourselves or for parents.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit to start with about what did long-term care used to look like 50 years ago? What were expectations?
Well, 50 years ago, people didn't live as long as they do now. Social Security just turned 50 years old, if my memory serves me. Medicare wasn't passed until 65. I'm terrible with math, so that's about, 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
And back then, when Medicare passed, people, one, didn't live as long. They lived about 65. And two, the major expense was hospital costs. That's what was bankrupting seniors back then. So that's what was focused on in the Medicare bill, and then they covered some physician costs so people could pay for their health care bills. But they weren't living as long, and people were living at home and had a lot of family support, which they don't do now. There's a lot of people who, I think my blog today said something like 40% of all families don't have family close by or family support like they used to have. I'm an only person. My family's in California, Texas, and Indiana, and I don't have any children. So long-term care is an issue to me.
Yeah, it is something to be planned for. I know one of the things when we discussed Medicare last week with my guest from Aging and Long-Term Care was that Medicare, Part A was just hospital insurance. Part B was added later. That's really the medical insurance that covers the doctors,
right,
and the actual treatment. And so we've already had to adapt Medicare to the new changes where there is more interventions. There are just simply more options for intervention and with more efficacy, too. So,
yeah. But it's still largely a fee-for-service system, which means that physicians get awarded for procedures, not necessarily for prevention or wellness. So that some of the changes in the Affordable Care Act, which a lot of people don't like, and I'll be the first to admit that, but some of them is an attempt to wrap a system of care around the person so that they get appropriate care in the appropriate setting. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one part of that, we touched on that a little bit before we started, was the whole doctors being able to have a conversation with their patients on what's their preferred quality of life. Before Medicare was the only insurance available to someone over 65, doctors could have a patient visit and cover everything. Now there's no code for having that conversation about what's your preferred quality of life, what would you like us to do, all that sort of thing. And those end-of-life discussions, they can be called death panels if there is somebody who is making a decision based on that. But it is very important to have those discussions. So I think it is a good thing that now has its own code so that you can have that conversation with your doctor.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's a very important conversation, and there's just a new book about it that's a very readable book. I think it's called Mortal Lives by a man named Atul Gawande, who's a physician, and he wrote the book because he was going through exactly those conversations with his own father about, and I think everybody wants to have, nobody wants to die in a hospital connected up to tubes and not being able to talk to their loved ones, I think. And having those conversations about what people want for their quality of life even as they're dying, I think is an extraordinarily important thing.
And I will have a future program just focusing on those conversations, but right now, getting back to the long-term care, that interim space between perhaps being completely independent and completely healthy and
right.
and approaching the end, and what does that care look like and what the options are. I just had read your blog last night on how your mother and her
right.
her illness with her decline with Alzheimer's. I know I had mentioned to you that my father had a similar kind of situation, but let me give you the floor for a moment to talk a little bit about what you learned from your journey with your mother.
Well, I was completely surprised by my journey with my mother because I thought I knew the healthcare system, and I've been in it for 30 years, and I started my career in aging and long-term care, and I knew it all theoretically and intellectually. And it's very different emotionally when you're going through that. And so because we don't live close by, it took me for a while to realize that it wasn't just grief that was happening to her. It was actually she could not make a distinction between a check for $400 or a frequent flyer mile coupon for $400. And so she's lived for 20 years down in San Diego with her friends, and I didn't want to move her out of that environment, and she didn't want to leave San Diego. So I found a retirement community for her. But because her cognitive abilities were so poor, she couldn't keep up a conversation. So her friends disappeared, and she couldn't make new friends. So we brought her up here so I could be closer to her. And I found this absolutely beautiful place which my mother would have loved. She was an elegant woman. She liked elegant surroundings, and it was an elegant, brand-new facility. And I thought it was fine. And I made the error of not checking in regularly about what was actually going on. And when I did, I found that I would come and pick her up, and we'd go out so she could get out of the facility. And when I did finally check in, and they weren't cleaning her room regularly, they weren't managing her medications, and so I just took her out of that place, and I found an absolutely wonderful facility for her. Some friends of mine had their father there, and they just loved it. And it was, but they didn't have anything. They had medication management, but they didn't have anything more than that. I should add right away that we did not have a long-term care insurance policy, and my mother's insurance was through the military, which was very generous from my father's career, but it didn't cover the long-term care expenses. So when she finally needed personal care, I had to move her from that facility, which was a fabulous facility, but they didn't offer assisted living or personal care services, which she was increasingly needing. And I hired someone to help me find an adult family home because it was still a personal area, not an institutional place that she would not have wanted. And it was a great facility, but they're all private homes, and the woman who owned it got married, and she sold the home to someone else who was horrible and changed the staff and raised the fees, and I was at my wit's end about what to do to provide decent, respectable care for my mom, was people would actually care about her as a person, even though she was declining as a cognitive individual. And I finally found this program. It's called Providence Elder Place, and there are programs like it across the country, but not very many. And they're largely for people who would qualify for Medicaid, and my mother never would have qualified for Medicaid because she had too much of a retirement income from my father's retirement, and they had some investments. So we paid privately for that, and all those facilities were costing $5,000 to $7,000 a month for personal care for when someone can't dress anymore or, you know, take care of personal matters.
I think that cost, I think, is what people need to understand is what they're looking at. Because I know that my parents also had a combination of military retirement and health care. You know, they had planned well, they were well set up, but long-term care was the missing piece.
Yeah, everybody thinks, most people think Medicare is going to take care of them, but Medicare doesn't cover assisted living care, and it covers limited skilled nursing care. So most people are going to be, it does cover home health care, and I'm not remembering off the top of my head how much or how long there's home health care services, but then you still need things like Meals on Wheels or a housekeeper or transportation, or if you need your home fixed up like rails for your bathroom, you still need that, and that's not covered. And so it's I don't think people realize a lot of the aging needs, and I think that's where programs that's like, you know, a Providence Elder Place that just kind of wraps themselves around you. And that's only for Medicaid patients. We could do it because I could afford to privately pay. There are new programs that they're starting. There's a new program. It's called Medicaring Communities, and it's just starting to be available in some states that lets people stay in their home. It's managed by a local community board, it's not by some for-profit institution out of state, and it combines both the personal care with the medical care for Medicare, well, and if necessary for Medicaid, and by personal funds if people have it to support.
That's a good place to take a short break and come back to that concept of Medicare in the community, a new direction to take.
Affordable health coverage is now available in Washington State. Better Health Together is a nonprofit organization offering free one-on-one assistance to help you explore your options, understand discounts and tax credits, and apply for coverage. We have 250 trained professionals throughout Eastern Washington ready to help you apply for coverage. To learn more about this free service and your insurance options, call Better Health Together at 509-321-7500. 509-321-7500.
The stories and photos on the pages of Nostalgia Magazine show glimpses of life in the Inland Northwest from years gone by. From home life, school days, and the workplace, you can relive a style of life that we all loved and cherished. Call today to subscribe, 443-3678, or visit us online at nostalgiamagazine.net. Nostalgia Magazine, ageless stories, ageless photos.
Congratulations! You found where Spokane Talks online. Tell your friends.
Okay, well, welcome back to the conversation with Kathleen O'Connor and on long-term care. And Kathleen, I appreciate you sharing the story of your journey with your mom through Alzheimer's to finally find the right setting for her, and it's a challenge for many who can't be that caregiver at home to find an appropriate setting outside of their own home. As you pointed out, there's 40% of seniors don't have that kind of family that could can take them in the way that used to be the case in the old days.
Right.
So I know our family experience with Alzheimer's was a little different. My mom's a retired professor of nursing. And she became my dad's caregiver and called herself a retired nurse with a caseload of one. But that was a big caseload at some times.
It is a big caseload.
My sister and I live relatively close by. My sister doesn't, but we were both able to pitch in and provide some relief at times, but not complete relief. It was a heavy burden. One of the things that made that work for us was certainly our own family capacity with experience in healthcare to be able to take that on. But again, we found, like you found with your mom, that there are programs set up for Medicaid, but it's difficult to find programs for those who have resources but don't have a long-term care insurance plan.
Right. Well, a lot of the long-term care insurance plans are not adequate. Their coverage is, well, first of all, they're hard to find anymore, and a lot of companies have gone out of business. There are some that are good, but most of the coverage is like 2 to 3 years at the most, and a lot of people are living much longer than 2 to 3 years, even with something like Alzheimer's disease. So we have to find new solutions that serve the family so that people don't go bankrupt, because what happens too frequently is that people have to get rid of their assets to pay for that care.
And right.
They've used wonderful terms like spend down, which means you have to get rid of your assets or spend them. And when they're gone, you become eligible for Medicaid. And when you're on Medicaid, you don't have as many choices as you would have otherwise.
Right, and that can leave a surviving spouse in a poor situation. So one of the things that my husband and I have looked for in long-term care insurance is to really press to make sure that it covers at-home care. We have a plan for kind of a family retirement in place with extended family, but knowing that supplemental care, how important that can be, we're kind of looked at that in our long-term care insurance shopping. But you had mentioned Medicare for All, that now Medicare is starting to get, the people are starting to look at reforming Medicare to address the reality that it's not that one big hospital bill that people fear, but it's this longer-term care that's the issue.
Yeah, well, Medicare for All means something different than long-term care.
I misunderstood.
No, that's okay. There's a number of models for how you can take existing Medicare benefits and combine them with the supportive models that are covered, like something like you must have them in Spokane, Senior Services, that provides like Meals on Wheels, and the supportive and personal care services that Medicare doesn't cover. Even assisted living Medicare doesn't cover. And so it's a way, you talk about you have long-term care insurance, and some of the new models are advocating special types of savings accounts that people can buy, even if they don't buy long-term care insurance. And I think I understand this correctly. It's a new program. But if you can have a special insurance fund, sort of like a health savings account, maybe, I think, and combine that with some of the public monies that are available, you know, like through Medicare and some of the other supportive programs like Meals on Wheels that are part of the Older Americans Act that people have is funded now, maybe you could put together a community like that, and that's what they're trying to do with some of these. They're like accountable care organizations in the Affordable Care Act, but they're not exactly like that, because they would include community-based care where the people actually are able to say what they value and what they want as they increase in age. Because just because you get older and more frail doesn't mean that you don't still have personal goals and responsibilities and desires like you would have for your family and like your mom might, you know, or dad would have wanted for themselves. So, and that's what we're missing, is how to add personal care and wishes in with a complex healthcare system.
So have you seen any movement? You spend a lot more time in healthcare policy than I do. Have you seen any movement within Medicare to do more than just tweak the rates? I mean, to really look at what it needs to cover and why? Because I know there are certainly extensive cost savings available between expensive repeat hospitalizations or skilled nursing care and really being able to provide focused services in home.
Well, there's a couple of things that I'm seeing. I think the Center for CMS, which is Medicare and Medicaid Services, is funding some demonstration projects to see how, if some programs are feasible. There's Medicare in communities I was talking about is one model. There's another model that's starting here in Seattle, and I think it started in Boston and a few other places, and they're called villages, community villages. So in my neighborhood, and I'm signing up for it, is that it provides things like help with transportation, medication management, and it provides, a big problem when you're older is often you get isolated, and when you get isolated, your brain doesn't work as well anymore, because you can, you know, feed in on yourself or you just watch TV, and that's not good for the old brain. So it has social activities that people may want to engage at, like going to the movies together, playing bridge, book clubs. And so it provides you with a community that takes care of each other for things. It won't as yet cover the personal care needs as somebody really declines with something like Alzheimer's.
And that
it's a start.
Yeah, and that is something that we need to face. I think that the the boom in Alzheimer's hitting the same time as the baby boomers retiring is really going to sink us personally and as a nation in costs. If we don't get a handle on how to really keep people integrated in their families and communities as long as possible and provide care that really enhances their quality of life.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but after my stroke, I was in a, they wouldn't let me go home for a while without 24/7 care. I, of course, thought I was totally competent, but yeah. They wanted to make sure that I was safe. And that's so I was in an assisted living facility for a while, and it was one of the better ones. But they had programs that weren't for people my age. They were for maybe for people that were old, maybe 80 or more, and they didn't have many things that engaged people who, as they were declining, so you were just basically left with, during the day, with some exercise programs, maybe a few outings, and a TV set. And, you know, just sitting and watching a TV doesn't help. And I've fought like tooth and nail to get out of there because I knew if I stayed there, I wasn't going to get better. So if you can have a community-based care system that engages you as much as you can be as you get older, it improves a person's quality of life and provides a community, which I think we all need and want. When we do work with Code Blue Now and ask people, you know, they would about how they care, thought about health care, and they all said, well, you know, it's not fair that I have insurance and other people don't. And, you know, I care, they all care about their neighbors and want to find a way to help, and we haven't had the tools before, and I think new models are now finally providing that. Your Empire Health Foundation has been doing some significant things in community engagement. I haven't read the whole report that I just got from the National Quality Forum. It's a draft. But Empire Health Foundation was cited, and Spokane's a community where you could actually do things. You know each other more than we do in something like Seattle.
There is something to the small community, and I'm from a very small community. My the village that I live outside of is about maybe 150 people if you draw really big borders to it, because I'm in an area where the average population density is 4 people per square mile.
Oh my goodness.
And so there is that kind of checking in on people. There are people that want to be left alone, and
right.
That's fine. We respect
right.
that. There are people that are well integrated and that do check in on each other, and that's fine. It's an individual choice how much
right.
one wants to connect. And Empire Health Foundation, thank you for that compliment. As past chair, one of the things that I'm proud that we've been able to do is to land some large money coming in from outside the region to work on try some different things for rural areas to help support and solve some of those issues of isolation. One of the things that's an issue, though, in rural areas is that there's no good solution that fits everywhere, because the problems are not only very individual to the person, but individual to the community as to what particular resources are there, or the just the basic geography.
Right, the geography is a problem.
It does become an issue. Transportation actually becomes the biggest issue for people. Because you have to be able to drive or to hitch a ride if you continue to live 20 miles from a grocery store.
Right.
And
I don't know if you have, I don't know how programs like Meals on Wheels, which is part of the Older Americans Act, and you obviously have probably a senior services in Spokane. I haven't done my research on that, but 20 miles to and from, it's a significant cost, even to nonprofit organizations.
Right. Spokane metropolitan area has a very strong Meals on Wheels program. It's not something that we offer in my county, in Lincoln County. Spokane Valley, the whole metropolitan corridor that actually extends from Spokane to Coeur d'Alene, is a nice small city size, a large metropolitan area size to provide those kinds of services. But it is a different challenge altogether in the rural areas.
Yeah, I know. I have family in the Panhandle of Texas, and they live in a little town called Texoma, which is of course on the border of Oklahoma and Texas. And my mom's cousin has significant health problems, and he has to drive into Amarillo, which is a two-hour drive each way, you know, for his medical care, because the town has, you know, maybe 1,000 people. The nearest hospital is 60 miles away. Mm-hmm. And so the rural areas, it's really tough. It's very hard to provide all those services. I wish there was something where there was more of a continuum of care that could be staged in those areas so that, you know, they could stay at home and get the support that they need. And I think that's where maybe a public-private partnership that we don't have these days could probably help a lot.
Well, one of the solutions, and it's the one that our family is looking at for ourselves, is the same as several friends of mine have done in my community, which is they've built an addition, remodeled a piece of the house, whatever, so that there is a they used to call them mother-in-law suites, which is,
oh great,
it's mostly their fathers that are there at the moment, but so that there is a place for them to stay at home. And it's just then you kind of cobble together what the relief system is for who's going to stay with them if you need to go somewhere, and you can make it work, but uprooting someone, just as it was hard for you to uproot your mom from San Diego.
Right.
I had a neighbor who had lived in the same, basically in the same square mile his entire life, birth to when he had to go finally to a long-term care, and it was just impossible. It was too hard to be uprooted like that for him.
Right. You know, the hardest thing on elders is moving them. I mean, because
right.
you get to, I was able to keep, you know, some of her treasures that she most valued with her so that she could look up and see a familiar picture of my dad and some other, we lived in Japan and she liked some of the Buddhist statues, so I could save some of those so that there was something that was familiar. And she lived finally, an adult family home where it was, they had sons and daughters and grandkids, and so there was a family coming through there. It wasn't just other people
right.
just being sick.
Yeah.
So I think if we put our minds to it, we could find something and a way to do it, but you know, we haven't done that yet.
Well, that's a good place to bring us to a conclusion, because we all want to get older, and we
right.
all want to do it at home or as at home as we can be. So we need to be facing into these conversations as we continue on reforming and reshaping and creating recreating our healthcare system. That planning is really essential to us as individuals and as society. And Kathleen, I want to thank you for your time, and we'll continue with another conversation here.
I look forward to it, Sulani. I think it was a great program, and thank you very much for inviting me.
All
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Better Health with Sulani Matson is produced in Spokane, Washington by SpokaneTalksOnline.com, which is solely responsible for its content. Ask Sulani a question, recommend a guest, and hear this program again online anytime at SpokaneTalksOnline.com. Cheers to better health together. Better Health is brought to you by Better Health Together. Thanks for listening.
Affordable health coverage is now available in Washington State. Better Health Together is a nonprofit organization offering free one-on-one assistance to help you explore your options, understand discounts and tax credits, and apply for coverage. We have 250 trained professionals throughout Eastern Washington ready to help you apply for coverage. To learn more about this free service and your insurance options, call Better Health Together at 509-321-7500. 509-321-7500.